In Colombia, drug trafficking paramilitary groups terrorized the country for many years and displaced more than 3.5 million people. Then 8 years ago, the Colombian government struck a peace deal with the traffickers in hopes of ending the violence. But many traffickers never actually disarmed. They simply reorganized. And now these new drug gangs are gaining strength, especially in the northern state of Cordoba. As a result, the mass displacement of people thought to be a thing of the past is starting up again. Nadia Drost reports.
The San Jorge River is a lifeline for several rural villages in Cordoba. It's also a key route for moving cocaine from Colombia's interior out to the Atlantic. On a bright, humid day, four members of Colombia's Civil Defense Force make a boat trip from the small city of Montelíbano up the San Jorge to inspect a remote village. 5 minutes after pushing off, trip leader Héctor Taborda gestures to the river ahead with a warning. He tells me we are entering a conflict zone where drug traffickers are in charge. As the boat moves upriver, the group stays focused on the water. Taborda explains the river is not just a battleground, but a graveyard where bodies are regularly dumped.
Here in this bend, we found two bodies 8 days ago.
2 hours later, the boat turns into a narrow grassy channel and we arrive at our destination, Villa Carmenia. About 100 thatched roof homes line the narrow dirt streets of this small village. It's quiet here. Too quiet. It sounds like this. Nothing. Other than bird calls, there's only silence here. Silence because every resident of what was once a community of 350 people has fled. Taborda leads me into a dilapidated house.
Here are the belongings people left behind. Radios. Look, there is a flashlight. A lot of them left with nothing else but their clothes. So they lost practically everything.
There's no one left here to tell the story of what happened, but the facts are known. Drug traffickers began appearing in Villa Carmenia about a year ago, brandishing guns and firing on rival gangs. Then, last summer, the traffickers killed four people in a neighboring hamlet. Rumors spread that Villa Carmenia would be next. A week later, every last resident left. Their departure marked what is becoming a familiar pattern across Cordoba. Gunfights, random massacres, and finally, the silence of empty homes and abandoned villages. The villagers fled here to Montelíbano. Many have moved on, but 19 families remain. They're living in the city's former slaughterhouse, the Plaza de Sacrificio. Norma Ojeda Guerra points to some thin mattresses in a passageway where cattle were once herded to slaughter. She jokingly calls the spot her penthouse. Others are sleeping in former cattle pens. They've tacked up plastic sheeting for privacy. Guerra says she doesn't know what to do or where to go, but she cannot face returning to Villa Carmenia.
The fear is very strong. Look, here. There are dogs. They bark at night as though someone is coming for us. That's what I think. All this fear accumulates.
Villa Carmenia is the first place in Cordoba to empty out completely because of drug violence in recent years. But it's probably not the last. The town of El Palmar lies 2 hours north of Villa Carmenia. It too may soon become a ghost town. El Palmar has the misfortune of sitting on the border of contested territory between two large drug gangs. The local parish priest, Father William de Jesus Guzman, walks me through the quiet town. Along the dirt streets, he points out houses that have been boarded up.
This house that we're passing is empty because the paramilitaries disappeared one of the members of this family. And out of fear, they left the area.
Residents here have many stories of sons or husbands who've been killed or disappeared by drug traffickers. They say they are in an impossible situation. They can face death if they collaborate, however unwittingly, with a rival gang. That can mean simply selling a beer to an enemy gang member. But refusing to help a drug gang can also mean death. What's more, extortion is rampant. Those who refuse to pay a protection tax to the drug traffickers might be ordered to leave town or be killed. Father William says the grip the gangs hold over the town is tightening.
It's like we're in a prison.
Libre en la cárcel.
Free, but in a prison.
Recently, 30 families left town. That's a quarter of El Palmar's population. Colombian army soldiers are now stationed here, and the drug gangs have backed off. But residents are afraid that as soon as the army troops move elsewhere, the traffickers will return seeking vengeance. Father William fears it could mean the end of El Palmar.
Se van muchos otras familias más.
Many more families will leave. They've expressed that. The day the military leaves, we leave too.
Anna and her family are one of the 30 who recently fled El Palmar. Anna is a pseudonym. She's scared to use her real name. Her family now lives with relatives in southern Córdoba. She leads me behind the cramped house so we can talk privately. On the other side of the concrete wall, bullfights are in full swing. Anna and her husband used to run a bar in El Palmar. One morning, gang members showed up. They pulled Anna's 13-year-old son out of school to turn on the bar's music system. Anna encountered them on the street. She immediately sensed danger.
And when I saw my son came back with this man, I said to him, Señor, if you permit us to stay alive, I'll leave this town. I'll go. Because I had a horrible feeling.
Soon, Anna's husband arrived and had to serve the traffickers beer after beer. In the afternoon, they started shooting him in front of his son. Then, they slit his throat. Anna fled the next day. The same weekend, 17 other families also left El Palmar. As Anna talks about the terror of the drug gangs, her son, who I'll call Pablo, stands beside her. He listens, but doesn't say a word.
This fear, it makes you want to hide in the ground, where they can't find you, because you fear they will kill you and your child.
Ay, Dios mío.
Pablo runs into the house, screaming at his mother. Anna pleads for Pablo, whom she calls her king, to come back. Pablo, she explains, is furious at her for talking about the murder to a journalist. He thinks it will make the traffickers come after them. But Anna says she doesn't want to silence her husband's memory. She says the crisis in her region is already ignored.
You see with a lot of sadness that it's very forgotten by the government, for everyone. Everything is fine. Nothing happens.
The Colombian government, meanwhile, says it's doing everything it can. It's boosted the number of federal police fighting the drug gangs, and in last year alone, arrested almost 3,000 traffickers. But the gangs continue to strengthen. The next morning, Anna puts on a fresh skirt and blouse and walks hand-in-hand with Pablo and her grandson into a local cemetery. It's the one-month anniversary of her husband's murder. His tomb is plain white, except for his name painted starkly in black. Anna leans into it, her face pressed across her husband's name. Pablo sits off to the side and avoids looking at his father's grave. Anna's grandson tugs at her skirt. No one speaks. Here, too, there's just more silence. For the World Vision Report, I'm Nadia Drost.